You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill.
And they're off.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Yes, hello, welcome along to the William Hill Racing Podcast. We're looking ahead to Tuesday's action on this edition. You'll hear it all live on Racing Radio from 1:30pm with Sam Norris, John Babb and James Millman in the studio. We've got racing from Forslast, Musselburgh and Newcastle in the afternoon, Nottingham and Chelmsford City in the evening, and racing over the Irish Sea as well at Ballinrobe. So plenty to get stuck into. My name is Mark Walton, joined in the studio by Rory DeLaghi. How are you, Rory?
I'm very well, thanks, Mark.
Good.
Nice not to have any hard journey into the office.
Yeah, some journey yesterday, wasn't it? How long did it take you in the end to get here?
It was literally 8 hours from when I was set to leave the house to eventually getting here, including hanging around King's Cross helpless for 2 hours.
Oh dear.
And another half hour in Doncaster.
Think of all the better places you could have ended up than William Hill Towers in 8 hours.
I know. But there you go. And it was. It was jolly good fun in the end, and we ended up, bizarrely enough, with 4 of us.
Yeah. That was it was all kinds of things going on.
Who'd have thought you'd won the best dressed man prize for the day?
Who did? I did.
Yeah.
I accidentally ended up on TV yesterday, which was quite fun. I quite enjoyed that, to be fair. But so it just shows you always take a jacket with you, just in case.
Just in case, indeed.
Let's move on to the Monday jury. That's where we're going to start this podcast. We've got obviously 6 questions in the Racing Post, and Rory's going to give us his thoughts on those, and then we're going to get Rory's selections for Tuesday. So we'll start off with the first question. How far do you think Irish Oaks winner Sea of Class will go this season?
She was impressive.
Yeah.
But I think it's hard to tell exactly how good she was. I think the fundamental issue with the race was it was one of the finest big race rides you'll see.
Ice cool, wasn't
all it? All year, ice cool from James Doyle, who's an exceptional jockey. She didn't race at 2. She could progress a fair bit. They're talking about going to the arc with her. And you can look at the arc and go, well, I don't think she's not as good as previous arc winners. But you kind of look at the arc field and you go, actually, you know, there's not an awful lot that's progressing the way she is at the right time.
Yeah.
Who will go there. Arguably at the top of her game. 3-year-old fillies have got a tremendous record in the arc, and especially those who are, you know, just beginning to peak. And of course, she's been brought along very quietly. She missed the Oaks. That was her big step up yesterday, or on Saturday rather. And she should improve again, certainly in pedigree she will.
Yeah.
So you can knock the form, because the same fillies have been beating each other through much of the season. And the one conclusion you can have about the 3-year-old crop is that there's nothing outstanding in there.
Yeah.
But she's got a chance of sort of, you know, pushing herself head and shoulders above the others if she keeps progressing. And she might well rock up at Longchamp with a better chance than you would have thought coming into the weekend's race.
Yeah, I mean, if she does keep taking steps forward from here, and like you say, the weight that fillies get, 3-year-old fillies get in the arc, you'd say she's perfectly entitled to come into it.
Yeah, and the other thing is, you know, if you think you've got a bad 3-year-old crop, you go, well, you know, the outstanding 4-year-olds or 5-year-olds will go and do them. And again, where are they? Cracksman has got questions to answer at the moment. Enable's been on the missing list. And they would be the 2 outstanding ones.
Mm.
So, you know, there's an opening there.
She's 16-1, by the way, for the ARC, which is probably all right. Not a bad price, 16-1. Enable's still a favourite. Obviously, we haven't seen her. 5-1, and Cracksman 7-1 has got his problems. He's second in the market, so I suppose that sums it up a little bit.
It does, rather.
Second question, who else went in your notebook from the weekend?
I'll give you something slightly left field.
Yeah.
From yesterday's racing, and that is a filly called Ancestral, who was 3rd in a 1.5-mile filly's maiden. You wouldn't really expect filly's maidens at the tail end of July to be especially strong races. But she's got a very, very good pedigree, very good-looking, scopy, rangy filly, very much like her half-sister, a filly called Quiff, a few years ago. He won the Yorkshire Oaks. I thought she moved like the best filly in the race yesterday and then was just undone by lack of peak fitness or lack of experience. I think she'll improve a lot for that run, finishing third to two decent enough fillies. And she's got a chance of turning into a black type filly at the end, you know, later on in the season. I think she'll be all right.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. Which of the bulging list of British and Irish contenders is best equipped for the Melbourne Cup? Obviously, we had an Irish success in the race last year, so I think we're going to get a bigger Irish and British challenge.
Yeah, Latrobe's the obvious one in that mould, representing exactly the same connections as last year's winner. And probably needs to win. Bizarrely enough, despite winning the Irish Derby, might have to win something else to get in the field. But we've discussed this before, and Withhold was the obvious answer in that, you know, this has been clearly been a long-term plan. I think even with trainers who really want to win the Melbourne Cup, you know, it's a case of stumble upon the right horse and then try to give them a campaign that gets them qualified and hope for the best. And Withhold, you get the impression this has been two seasons in the making. Tony Bloom extremely keen to win the Melbourne Cup. And the way they've qualified Withhold is jaw-dropping.
Yeah,
you know, normally you think, right, let's get placed in a couple of black type races and get qualified. Or we could win two of the toughest handicaps of the entire season. That also qualifies you. Boom, thank you very much.
Yeah, and won them both pretty impressively as well. So.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Next question. Is Hardwick winner Crystal Ocean the answer in the King
I see
George?
You looking at your watch here, so I'll make this simple for you. Yes is the answer. Let's move on to the next question.
13-8 favourite for the King George, by the way. Ahead of Poet's Word at 5-2. Kew Gardens 5-1. 7-1 Cracksman. 9-1 for Voldgeist even. And 10s or bigger for the others. Could actually be a decent renewal if all of the, you know, some of those turn up. I'd like to see Cracksman. I don't know what's happening with him, but
Yeah, we could easily be writing off Cracksman a bit too early. He's not been horrific.
No.
He's just, you know, the wheels haven't fallen off. It's just sounded a little bit squeaky.
Yeah,
that's all.
It's nice. I like that. Give us a horse or two exciting you for the second half of the season.
Batash. Not been a lot of talk about about the top sprinters. And, you know, we got York not that far away, and obviously the King George takes a good bit of possibility. He really should have won at Royal Ascot. He did too much in France. Still looked something really special at 5 furlongs. And, you know, when we're talking about gaps appearing among the top echelons, it's nice to have someone like him who's arguably the best horse in training last year.
Yeah.
Didn't really get the credit for it. I mean, we were talking about champion sprinters without mentioning him. You know, Harry Angel, the best sprinter in the world. Well, what about Batash, for goodness sake? he's still very exciting, and hopefully he can remind people how good he is again this year.
Yeah, obviously because he finished second, it takes the gloss off his performance a little bit, but to even finish second, given the fractions he went, that's a huge performance.
Yeah, and again, people were still talking pre-race about, oh, his temperament won't hold up, and, you know, for him to have had the gun put to his head like that and still run the race that he did shows how tremendously talented he is.
Final question of this week's Monday Jory: who could threaten Without Parole's perfect record in the upcoming Sussex Stakes?
No one really. I mean, there's a point, you know, Without Parole could come unstuck. But when you start looking through the field, again, we had a similar question to this a couple of weeks ago about whether Beat the Bank was a contender, and your initial reaction is not really. Beat the Bank isn't quite top class. Then you look at the field and go, well, actually, Beat the Bank might be the second best horse in the race. And if that's the case, then Without Parole looks to have a very, very good chance of winning.
6-4 Without Parole. Gustav Klimt 5-1. 6-1 Beat the Bank. Lightning Spear 7s. 8s or bigger for the rest at the moment. I think that 6-4 might get shorter as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing in the prices behind that horses who are unexposed and suddenly going to improve. They're horses who've been there and done it and have come up a little bit short as a general rule.
Society Power at 14s, could you give that a squeak at a double figure price?
Yeah, that's at least darker than some of those at shorter prices, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that's the Monday jury then for another week. We'll leave that there and we'll move on to the action coming up on Tuesday. Rory has two races prepared for us, the first of which is the 440 at Force Lass, which is a handicap over 5 furlongs, a field of 10 set to go to post for this one. And I suppose we could start, if you wouldn't mind, with Ellen Gates, who is one of those horses with the frustrating run of seconds next to her name. Is it through attitude or just bumping into them? It's one of those where you have to try and work that, I suppose.
Yeah, there seems to be nothing wrong at all with her attitude in a finish, although she did hang last time. And sometimes horses can, you know, when you just look at the final 50 yards of race and go, is this horse putting it in? The answer appears to be yes. And yet they still run up losing sequences. And in a manner of speaking, it doesn't matter enormously if you're a punter. The question is whether it's just coincidence or whether there is a weakness there, whether it's a temperamental one or whether it's a physical one. And I'd be happy to side against Ellen Gage. She's a three-year-old against older horses, and they tend to do well at this time of the year. Although, again, it's worth pointing out what kind of races the three-year-olds thrive in, and those are the middle-distance races generally. You know, you look at handicaps from a mile and a quarter to 2 miles from the midsummer onwards, the three-year-olds are, you know, the good three-year-olds are almost unbeatable.
At
sprint distances, sprinting at a decent level is largely about strength and power, and older horses tend to hold their own better than the youngsters do. Obviously, horses who happen to be improving and are ahead of the handicapper will win races anyway. Whether you could say that Ellen Gates is improving is debatable, though. But she's still, you know, she's a three-year-old with a fair record, and she's got chances in there, but she's not going to be the selection. We should throw in Silently as an interesting one there as well, despite the fact that she's a five-year-old. She's well-bred and lightly raced, and she could find a little bit more. But she needs to improve if she's going to beat the mighty Molly Jones. An absolutely fabulous mare, Molly Jones, been a real star for her stables down the years. Now with Matt Salomon, has been for the last couple of years. She had a fairly long time off before, I think it's before the last start of last season or the season before. Took her a while to find her form again. But despite the fact that, you know, she's rated 53, and that sums her up in terms of ability, she's tremendously reliable and very game as well. And she got the job done. She went off at a massive price, 50-1, and unwanted at 50-1 in the market, but winning at Chepstow last month. She's run three times since, run really well every time. She's given a poor ride when she was fourth at Bath on her next start, where she takes time to warm up in her races. She's a little bit creaky for the first half of any race. Needs to be kept out to work. She tends to get a little bit behind, and then she runs on very strongly. But what she does is she actually breaks well, and then she just struggles to go the early pace over 5 furlongs because, you know, for whatever reason, she might be a little bit jointy, but she loves fast ground. But on that occasion at Bath, Joey Haynes, who rode her, took a pull, leaving the stalls. That's disastrous. She doesn't need anyone to slow her down any more than she's going anyway. Whereas when Mark Crean rode her at Chepstow, she bounced out the stalls in front, and she then lost her place before running on strongly to win. And again, Tim Clark, who rode her at Bath on her next start, just went after her from the start. She, again, struggled a little bit with the early pace, but finished really strongly and held her main challenger in a tight finish. And then she's run to that level of what, even better than that level, when third at Chepstow last time out. And she has, that was a mark of 57, which is probably on the high side for her. I guess that was under a penalty for Bath. She's back to 53 now. The same jockey rides her, Seamus Cronin. Now, I've got a lot of time for Seamus Cronin. I'm not entirely sure where he went for 6 months, but last year he looked like he was going to be potentially in contention for a champion apprentice. He looked really, really promising. And then from November, we saw nothing of him. But he's come back in the last month to start riding for primarily for Richard Hannan. He was with Kevin Ryan last year. So I wonder whether he's had his indentures moved. And hopefully he's, you know, whatever kept him off is behind him now. He's ridden three winners in the last few weeks. And he's definitely worth a £7 claim. This guy's been riding. He was training racehorses a decade ago as an 11-year-old. You know, pony racing in Ireland. He was officially training and riding his own horses.
Wow.
And he was a very good pony rider, very talented. And he's still claiming £7 now, and that's potentially gold dust. He got to know her last time out. She has a tremendous record when getting her conditions. If you separate her form out and just look at her races in Class 6 company, over 5 furlongs, a bare 5 furlongs on quick ground, she's got a tremendous strike rate. She sometimes looks like she needs further because of the fact that she gets a bit outpaced earlier, but that's got nothing to do with her wanting a longer trip. She just needs to warm up in her races, and 5 furlongs is her best trip. And if you just look at her form over that trip over the years, and in the right class, she does really well. And here she is still in that class, running off 50, off 46 after Seamus's claim. And I think she takes all the beating again.
Molly Jones, the selection then, good case stated by Rory there. in that 440 at Force Lass, and then we moved to Chelmsford City for the 610, which is an apprentice handicap over 7 furlongs. Field of 13 set to go to post for this one. It's quite an open event you've picked here, Rory. So what's caught your eye in there?
Well, there are three who've caught my eye in here in a bizarre sort of way. They all come from the same race. They're the main one, and I'll probably go with this to keep it simple, because the case for Stoser is very strong. She won at Lingfield 2 starts ago, off a mark of 58, and then she ran here in a 7 furlong handicap in which she was drawn wide. She was dropped right out She was ridden way back in the field, but she didn't save any ground. She was kept incredibly wide on the track and ended up losing a lot of ground around the bends. Looked like she was going to finish tailed off in the early stages and ran on to finish third, closing very strongly at the finish. That was a really eye-catching run. What's more eye-catching is how the form has worked out. That was a race won by De Little Engine, who's taken off in recent starts since joining Alex Dunn. So he won his next start impressively. And there have only been 2 other runners in that race. Emily Goldfinch, who finished 5th, won well at Yarmouth. And Amberine, who was 7th, also won next time out. And that was by a decent margin, despite being out of the weights at Bath. So the form could not have worked out any better. And Stoser was a real eye-catcher. So I thought she was the obvious way to go. I thought she'd have to be favourite for this on that showing. Given that, you know, if you watch that race and ask people what their opinion of it was straight afterwards, a lot of people would say Stoser should have won that. And given that, you know, if you think she should have won, the form has worked out as well as it has. She has to look well handicapped off 61 again, with Gavin Ashton, who's Sir Mark Prescott's apprentice, taking £7 off. Aaron Jones rode last time out. So those are obvious claims. And the Tissue has Stoser in at 11-1, the one I'm looking at. Now, yeah, obviously, Tissues are very unreliable. But if that's accurate, then there's no point trying to be clever about this. If she was, you know, a general 3-1 shot, and everyone spotted that, and she was that price, it's worth bearing in mind that 2 others from this race also ran there. Jack Nevison being one of them. He only finished 6th in the end, but that was his first run since March.
Yeah.
He's entitled to be fitter for it. And, of course, the last time he ran off this mark at Chelmsford, he was a winner over course and distance. So he might be underrated. And the other one to come from the race was Shy Arch, who was 2nd for Christine Dunnett. And Jane Elliott, he rallied strongly to finish 2nd in front of Stoser that day. And you could argue that he raced close to the pace. The winner was never far off the gallop, but they did slow late on. They went very fast in the early stages. And so you could argue that Stoser was a little bit flattered to close up late on. But at the same, I think that's counterbalanced by the fact that she lost so much ground by sitting so far off the pace and racing wide, that her late rally was still impressive anyway. But there is a possibility the other two who ran in that race could be marked up for racing a bit closer to the pace, particularly Jack Nevison, who disputed the lead. So he's interesting enough. And Shy Arch is not going to be a big price, but Jack Nevison might be. So I'd be looking at his price early, but in terms of going for the obvious bet in there and in the absence of prices, Stoser is very obvious.
Stoser, the selection for Rory then in the 6-10 at Chelmsford. Of the pair, which would be the stronger opinion do you have?
Molly Jones, because, you know, I've been following Molly Jones for about 4 or 5 years now, and what she needs is very, very obvious. And she's got it again. She's still well handicapped, and the jockey, I think, is a big plus as well.
Good stuff. Thank you very much, Rory. Good luck and enjoy the action on Tuesday.
Thank you very much.
There you go. The thoughts of Rory Delaghi on Tuesday's racing. You'll hear it all live on Racing Radio from 1:30 p.m. Sam Norris, John Babb and James Millman, the team in the studio. Force Lass, Musselburgh, Newcastle, the afternoon meetings. And it's Nottingham, Chelmsford and Ballinrobe throughout the evening. So do join the guys for that. Thank you very much for listening to this William Hill Racing podcast. And enjoy Tuesday's action.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.